You're listening to the sweet cosmic sounds of WHIVLP in New Orleans, 102.3 FM. This is radio programming dedicated to public health, human rights, and social justice. Put an end to all wars. Yeah.
Good afternoon. You are listening to www.whivfm.org. I'm sorry, on 102.3 WHIVLP FM in New Orleans, streaming online at www.whivfm.org. We are radio programming dedicated to public health, human rights, and social justice. We hear independent voices. Today we've got a wonderful independent voice with an amazing story. We have in our studio today Patricia Meyer, who is going to tell us a little bit about her search for her birth parents. Patricia was adopted at birth and has just a wonderful, wonderful story. Good morning. Good afternoon, Patricia.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Why don't you start and tell us what started you off on this journey?
Well, I always knew that I was adopted. Some parents wait to tell their children until a certain age, but my mother told me the story like you would tell a fairy tale to a child, that there was a woman in the world.
And when you say mother, you mean your mother that raised you,
yes.
Not your birth mother.
Yes. Okay. When I speak of my mother, if I say mother and father, those are my adoptive parents.
Okay.
And when I'm referring to my birth parents, I say birth father or birth mother.
Perfect.
Or, So my mother, my adoptive mother, told me about my adoption as though it was just a small fairy tale you would tell a child. You know, there was a wonderful woman who had a child who unfortunately couldn't give you everything that you needed. So she gave you to me because she knew that you'd have a wonderful home. And so I think she told me that when I was two or three, too young to even understand the difference. And so I always grew up knowing I was adopted. And my parents always told me that when I was ready to search, I could. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I would do that when I was 18 or 19. I thought I might look, but I wasn't extremely excited about doing it.
Right.
And then I had my daughter. And when I gave birth to my daughter, I really got the urge to meet my birth mother.
How old were you when you gave birth to your daughter?
I was 19.
Okay.
And I guess the irony of that is I was also an unwed mother. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the idea of adoption myself for my child, thinking, because I had been told when you're young and you don't have anything, you know, you're struggling to take care of yourself and learn about the world, how can you do this? You know, the best thing to do is to give your child to another person that's better off, that can give them a better education, and right. So on and so forth.
Love is free.
So I was a bit torn about that, but I knew that there's no way I could live in the world and be okay not having my daughter and not knowing my birth mother.
Right.
That would
right.
have just been too much.
Sure.
And, of course, then when I made the choice, and after I gave birth to her and I held her and I met my very first living, breathing blood relative that was my child, I had this incredible experience of knowing what my birth mother went through when she parted with me, and right. how incredibly hard that must have been for her.
Right.
So my desire shifted from wanting to meet her for my own personal reasons to, as a compassionate mother, wanting to reach out to her
right.
and say, I'm okay. If you're out there worried about me in the universe somewhere, I'm okay. And so I looked a couple times, and at the time it was in the early 90s, and all of the records that they had about my birth were available, because I actually found out that I was not legally adopted. The adoption had never taken place. So when I called and said, you know, how do I get my birth records unsealed, they couldn't find any. So I went to my mother, my adoptive mother, and said, why can't they find any? And she said, you know, it's been very hard for me to tell you this, but your adoption was never finalized. It wasn't legal.
Wow.
It turns out that the attorney had been, there was, in the 1970s, there were, let me see what the statistics say, I think 175,000 adoptees, adoptions that happened in the 1970s. So we had, sorry about that. So, we got some things going on in the studio.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw you after.
That's all right. So in the 1970s, there were many, many adoptions, and there were the things called black market babies. And so some attorneys were unscrupulous with the way that they found children.
What is a black market baby exactly?
Babies that were basically sold without. Well, there were babies that were stolen and sold, and then there were babies that are just not handled through legal adoptions, basically is what that means. And so the attorney, in my case, just kept asking my parents for more money and more money, and mm-hmm. they had paid him almost over 1.5 times what they'd agreed to. And I was 6 months old, and they still didn't have the adoption finalized. And by a year, they said, we can't pay you anymore. And he said, then it will not be finalized.
Wow.
And they were so afraid to go to the police to report it that I would be taken away from them and out of their custody that they just decided they'd figure out how to live, for me to live a life, without this being legal.
Right.
Which was very difficult because they didn't end up getting my birth certificate and later applied for a lost certificate of birth,
mm-hmm.
which I use to this day.
Did that have your birth parents on it? The lost certificate?
No, because the adoption was never legal. And so that's what I found out when I was looking. And that's what I think was crucial in helping me find my birth parents, because a lot of people who are adopted, their records are sealed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone who's legally adopted, their records are sealed, and they don't have access to those records.
Right.
There are registries in place now where you can, if both parties want to be found, they can match and be found.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, they didn't have that for me.
Right.
And in the early 90s, they didn't have any records digitally. So I walked into the office in Austin, Texas, because I'm from Texas,
mm-hmm.
and said, show me your books where that records every birth born, every baby born in the state of Texas.
Oh, wow.
For a given year.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, I know where I was born. I know when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
All I have to do is figure out where's the baby girls in this list,
right,
that had no name, that were, the mother wasn't listed as not married, or no birth father was listed on the record. There couldn't be that many in the time frame that I know that I was born.
Right.
So this secretary lady comes out and plops 6 gigantic volumes. The wow. paper was paper thin, like almost like you would see in a Bible.
Yeah.
With tiny little writing.
I've been in the courthouse here, yeah.
And it was listed by mother's last name, by county, by month of birth and year.
Right.
So to go through that, there was no way. I mean, there was no way I was going to be able to go through that. So I looked at the books. I said, I know I'm in there.
But right.
There was no way I could find it. So eventually technology caught up, and I left that behind.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually technology caught up, and I went, well, it was after my mother passed away when I was 38, 39, and I started looking again, and I thought it was going to be a very long, difficult process, and found out that this all these records were now digital, and they were in a database, and you could search against anything that you wanted to.
Right.
So it was simple as me saying, in a particular time period,
mm-hmm.
where are the I'm looking for mothers, like I said, with babies a baby girl with no name and no birth father listed.
Right. Real quick, so your mother, your adopted mother, how did she feel about you looking? Did you talk to her about this?
I did. Right. Yeah. It was actually right before she passed, mm-hmm. and I'd been close to finding some information,
mm-hmm.
and she said that she wanted me to look. She didn't want me to be alone when she was gone. My father had passed away when I was 25. And she said, but at the same time, I don't know that I would want to be alive when you did, because it would be very hard for me to have to share you.
Aww.
And she said, but at the same time, I know that this process is going to be very hard for you emotionally when you do find her, and I am going to be very sad that I won't be there with you to help you through it.
That's so sweet.
And I told her, first of all, I said, yes, I may search, but I want you to know you're not replaceable. I'm not trying to replace you or replace a mother.
Right.
It's just I want to find the rest of my story, and, mm-hmm. and I will need family, because sure. I was an only child, and both my parents were gone.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting because the word replaceable really does define the relationship between, at least between my mother and myself, an adoptee and an adoptive mother, because I was brought to her to replace children that she lost and children she could not have. And she was brought to me to replace the mother that I initially could, you know, my original mother that I could not have.
Right.
And so there is that element of playing that role for one another. But in the end, she was irreplaceable to me.
Of course.
As I was to her.
Right.
And I think that's the thing, that when adoptees go out to search and some adoptive parents feel betrayed, or didn't we not give you enough? Were we not the best parents? How, you know, something missing that we should have taken care of for you emotionally. It that has nothing to do with it. It's it's just truly just a need to know your complete story, to finally stop walking around looking through crowds trying to figure out, who do I look like? Could that person be related to me?
Right.
I said that when you finally find your true story and you understand how you came into the world, it's just so grounding. It's like waiting to exhale, and then you take your adoptee antenna down and you stop searching faces and searching crowds.
And you know, that's something that we all take for granted when we do have two parents, that people that aren't adopted. I've never once thought. I mean, I had friends that were adopted, but we never really talked about it, and I never thought about the emotional turmoil that it may cause inside.
You know, the many adoptees do say that they're not affected by being adopted. They're perfectly fine. They had wonderful upbringings, and I had an absolutely wonderful upbringing. So what I try to say to them is. Yes, you know, some people have much better experiences with adoption than others. But I believe that as an adoptee, the fact that you were adopted, the fact that you were taken away from the one person who's, we're all drawn to be, you know, you watch a mother dog with her pups. It's just a natural connection that is broken.
I'm kind of like that with my puppy.
And that affects you for the rest of your life. And for many adoptees, if you don't realize, if you haven't done your work and read up on adoption, you don't always realize that some of the anxieties that you have in life, some of the self-defeating behaviors, sometimes being an overachiever, sometimes keeping relationships at arm's length so you won't be hurt or left again, all relates back to this feeling of fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, and sometimes a lack of experiencing a healthy attachment. For instance, part of my story, there was a discrepancy when I finally did meet my birth mother, that she gave birth December the 22nd, and I believed my birthday to be January the 5th. Mm-hmm. And now we don't know, and I didn't come home to my adoptive family until the 11th. We don't know where I was for the first 3 weeks of my life. And so we don't know if I was in a hospital, if I'd gone to a different family. I don't actually know the actual date of my birth. Mm-hmm. My birth mother recalls that it was December the 22nd, but she's not certain.
Right.
And the date that the attorney gave my parents was January the 5th. So,
which one do you celebrate?
I celebrate the 5th.
Yeah. That way you don't have to do the whole Christmas birthday present thing. Smart.
Yeah, that too. So you have... I lost train of thought.
That's okay. We were talking about how you feel being adopted and how your mother gave the wrong birthday. We don't know where you were.
Yes. Yeah, so,
for 3 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah,
so, when when you're, I was talking about attachment. And so when those, when you're, for instance, in my case, I don't know where I was with, I obviously wasn't with a, the same, you know, a steady caregiver. And in those first few weeks after being born, and especially even in the first few hours, there is an attachment bond that happens with your parent, with your mother.
Right.
And if you miss out on that, it leads to, it's the and the baby's brain is still developing as well. So it almost wires you to feel, to come up in the world with a bit of insecurity and a bit of feeling that you almost have a self-sufficiency that you have to rely on, because things are not permanent. Right. And a lot of that goes back to just the very, very first few hours and weeks and after of birth. Right.
It's amazing what stays with us. I mean, I guess we don't really know how many things do and don't, but it's amazing how many things really do.
Yes, they do. And so, but you can, you know, if there's plenty of books out there to read and learn about how to, you know, recognize if you have, what type of attachment styles you have. And there's a book called Wired for Love, and it talks about that. Mm-hmm. And
when it's Wired for Love.
Wired for Love, okay. And adult attachment theory. And it's very, and it really taught me a lot about to understand that. But not all adoptees don't have difficult attachment.
Sure. But, well, everybody's different. Do. Yeah.
Yeah. But they have proven, though, that babies can pick out their own mother's breast milk from a sample. They can pick out their faces and their voices.
Interesting.
And so there is a missing piece.
Right.
And it starts out on day one.
Right. That's amazing. Yeah. We are the animals we try to say we're not, although we act like them on Mardi Gras. But So tell us a little bit about what happened after you started your search. How did you end up, let's start with after your mother passed away. What happened then?
Right. So I did find a name in the, through the Bureau of Vital Statistics, Ancestry.com can actually connect you to these databases.
Okay, so Ancestry.com is a great source. I've always wondered about those. I've seen the commercials for them, and I never really understood it. So what exactly is Ancestry.com? What's on there?
Well, Ancestry.com is it's a genealogical website, and so they have access to all types of different databases and data records, and marriage license records and all of that sort of thing. So I narrowed it down, my results down to, well, where I was going with that is, it turns out when I did the search for mother, not married, baby girl, no name, no birth father listed in, there it was, one baby on January 5th in this county.
Oh, wow. That didn't make it very hard then, right?
No. Yeah. And it gave her maiden name. And I thought, well, where do I go from here? And so I started a search for all persons in Texas with that maiden name. And she was a hard one to find. I found a woman that was in prison for murder who looked a lot like I did. I had a lot of...
Since people out there can't see you, you do not look like someone that would ever go to prison.
But I had a few false starts, but I expected it to be like a 10-year journey. I've known people who've searched their whole lives and still haven't found.
Right. So your journey was 10 years?
No, no. Oh, okay. Well, I poked around, but when I really got serious and went to work on it after my mother passed... I turned 40 and put it at the top of my bucket list, find birth mother.
Right.
It took about a month to a month and a half from start to finish. It was very, very fast.
That's wonderful.
It was amazing. I can imagine having had to wait so long. And as you get older, you don't, there's only so much time you can wait.
Right.
So from there, with her maiden name, I found, I came to a roadblock, and I had connected with this wonderful woman named Betsy, who is a search angel. And search angels volunteer their time to look, use all these records and databases I've been talking to you about to help you sew together your mystery and find your...
Right. You know, how does somebody find a search angel?
Well, that's a bit harder.
How did you find one?
Well, adoption.com and cousinconnect.com are, and there's many other databases.
Adoption.com and cousinconnect.com.
Yes, where you can put in your information and say, I'm searching for my birth mother and here's all my information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like angels come to you when you need them. That's how my angel came to me. They go to these places and they look for stories that they think they can actually help and find, and they often contact you.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it gives you a little hope for humanity.
Yes, and they do it for free, usually wow. because someone helped them.
Right.
And they're paying it forward.
That's wonderful.
And so I reconnected with Betsy, and I say reconnected because she'd actually reached out to me several years before, but mm-hmm. My mother hadn't passed yet, and I wasn't ready.
Okay.
And so I reached back out to her and said, here's what I've got. What can you help me find? And within moments, she came back with I have a woman with a different last name. It's a married name. It shows that this woman married a man in the military and moved to Hawaii.
Okay, I know.
And moved to California uh-huh. and at some point in Hawaii and had a son. And I said, well, but this woman's in California. My birth mother's from Texas. And she said, well, a lot of mothers back then, as soon as they had let go of a child, they'd go right out, find themselves a husband, and have another baby.
Wow.
It's very common. She said, and back then, a lot of girls were signing up with boys in the military, and that's where people shipped out of California. I guarantee you, she came back home. She's probably living in Texas, very close to where she grew up. And so look in Texas.
Interesting.
So she gave me the name.
Interesting. Real quick, let's take a quick music break.
Okay.
So we'll stop in Texas on our story.
Okay.
And we'll take a quick music break. You're going to listen to Proud Mary by Tina Turner.
You might like to hear something from us. Nice. Easy. There's just one thing.
Down in the city.
You see, we never, ever do nothing.
Working for the man.
Nice.
Every night and
easy.
Day.
We always
but
do it.
I never lost
nice.
One minute of sleep.
Rough.
And now
we're going to take the beginning of this song.
The thing
and do it.
Been.
Easy.
Big wheel.
But then we're gonna do the finish.
Burning.
Rough.
Proud Mary.
It's the way we
keep
do.
On burning.
Proud Mary. And we're rolling. Ooh, rolling. Ooh, rolling on the river. Listen to the story. Left a good job
down in the city.
Working for the man every night and day.
Saw all the good side of the city until I hitched up.
Hello and welcome back. You are listening to 102.3 FM, WHIVLP in New Orleans. You can stream online at WHIVFM.org. I am speaking to Patricia Meyer today, and we are talking about her adopted life, which brings me up her blog. If you'd like to know a little more information after we're done, don't go here until after we're done. The website is www.myadoptedlife.com. It's a brilliant story, and we're going to continue. When we left off, we were in Texas, and Patricia has been looking for her mother, and she got to Texas. So why don't we go ahead, Patricia?
Thank you. So I had been told that my birth mother had probably returned to Texas, and that I should search with her married name that the search angel had helped me find.
Right.
So I went on to the computer, put in her name, and up came a reunion website about the class of from the class of 67, 68, something like this, because she was 20 years old when she conceived me. And I see this reunion website, and I start looking through it, and it's from an area about 45 minutes north of where I grew up. And so I'm searching around, and I find an address listing, here's how to contact everyone that went to this school, blah, blah, blah. Then I see that they had scanned in the high school yearbook photos into the onto the site. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to look for a name. I'm going to look for a face. So I took a piece of paper, and I, of course, I pulled up the images, just the yearbook images. You know, in some yearbooks, they'll put the names all down the side or the right margin. So I took my paper, put it over the names, and just looked at all the faces of the women or girls in the on the page. And as I got to the bottom, I really thought I was not going to see it. As I got to the bottom, there I was, a very similar face to my own. I recognized it immediately.
Wow.
I pulled the paper aside, and there was her name. So I was quite sure that I'd found the right person.
Mm-hmm. By face, that's incredible.
Yes. So I pulled it aside, found it, and decided I would be writing a letter, that I thought that was the best way to go. It's a very scary thing, because you don't know what they've told their families. You don't know if someone else is going to get the letter. You won't even know if they got the letter. Fortunately for me, the website also listed her email address. Mm-hmm. So I was able to email her as well. But I still thought she should have an actual letter, especially some people have dead email addresses or they don't check them and all of that.
Right.
So I did a very sweet, significant thing that still, when I think about it today, kind of chokes me up. I had bought some thank you notes after my mother had passed. They were beautiful gold butterfly thank you notes, blank cards. And I only had a few left, but I'd saved them that I'd sent to people who'd, you know, helped me through through losing my adoptive mother. And I wrote this letter to my birth mother on that card, mm-hmm. to sort of connect the two of them.
Right.
And she received it, and I think it was only a few days, and I made a point to be in Houston. It just coincidentally happened, but also sort of a point to be in Houston, because I thought, well, if she gets the letter or she gets the email, I'll be in Houston and I can meet her. And sure enough, she got the letter, and she said that when she opened it, she nearly fainted, and her husband was standing in the kitchen with her, and he said, did someone die? And she hadn't
so
told.
So she was married.
She was married for 20 years. She'd been married for 20 years. She hadn't told him about me, mm-hmm. Nor had she told my half-brother about me. So she said, I'm going to go to the bedroom. Come in here in about 15 minutes. Just give me some time, and I'll tell you what this is about. She picked up the phone. She called me, and by that afternoon, my daughter just happened to be in town with me. We were standing face to face in front of each other.
Wow.
And we knew
how
it was.
How did you feel when you saw her for the first time?
I want to answer that, but I have to clarify something.
Sure.
We knew, we didn't just go on looks. I verified with her through email that she had used the same attorney. I knew the name of the attorney. And it was then that she said, the only thing is your birthday was not the 5th, it was the 22nd. So we had a little bit of concern. But then when we really met, there was just no doubt about the similarities. What it was to meet her and stand in front of her was just, I don't have words for it. It was, I was scared to death. It was, in many ways, it was like looking in a funhouse mirror because I could see myself, but it wasn't exactly myself. And plus, it was a 60-something-year-old version of myself.
Right.
But it was beautiful. And my daughter was there and was able to share it with me. So we met, this is so funny too, we met at a catfish parlor. Not where you would think, not where you think you would meet right. someone. She wanted to go to a wine bar, but it was closed. And I thought, that's where you're supposed to meet your birth mother, right. not at the catfish parlor. But that's what we did. And then we sat and ate catfish. So it's very surreal. It's, you know, here's this woman that birthed you. You haven't never met. It's been 42 years, and now you're eating catfish together.
It happens.
Yeah. And so it was there that she told me about my conception.
Okay.
And I asked what she knew about my birth father. And at the time, she told me that that she had been raped. And it's something you don't expect to hear, especially the day or the moment that you're meeting.
Right.
Date raped in right. a parking lot outside of a bar by a man that she'd been with for been seen just once or twice.
Right.
And I hate to say it because I have a friend who's a sex therapist and she says, never, never question a, you know, someone that says that because you're going to re-victimize them. They've already been victimized once.
Right.
But I just didn't believe that this person that date raped her was my birth father. And of course, nobody wants to think that that would be who he was.
Right.
But my intuition told me there was more.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't going to press it because we were just into reunion. And so after about a year and a half of us talking and examining things, and she got a little bit of therapy to help her remember, because memories that far back and the trauma that you experience through giving a child up
right.
can really turn things around and make finding the right truth very difficult.
Right.
It's
when
very
you
traumatic.
Tell yourself things that may not be true as a salve into your brain so you don't have to think about it positively.
Or you just remember what you remember and you make the sense of it that way. And so I just thought there might be more. So she talked to a therapist, and the therapist helped her to recall that she had been with another man just 2 weeks prior to this situation with his name was Ben, the man that she said was my that she thought was my birth father who had date raped her. And she remembered that she had been with Jerry. And it's a story of Ben and Jerry, but it's not about ice cream.
It is kind of a rocky road.
It is a rocky road, yes. 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 And so she remembered Jerry, and without even telling me about this, she looked him up on classmates.com. And she remembered his whole name and found him and asked him if he was interested in reunion, which he absolutely was. And he was shocked beyond belief because she had not told him about conceiving me. Mm-hmm. So he was very surprised. But the story of how these two got together is a very interesting one. Once I met my birth father, he told me that he was buddies with Ben and that they hung out together and that he had met Lana through Ben. And he knew that Ben had been married and had children in another state. And at some point, Ben and Lana stopped being together, and Lana invited Jerry, my birth father.
Lana was your birth
mother. My birth mother. I'm sorry. I just used her name for the first time. I should have said that. But so she invited him to come to her 20th birthday party. So he stopped on the way and bought her a silver bracelet, showed up, and like you played earlier, they had a wonderful dance to Proud Mary. The Creedence Clearwater Revival's version was in the top 20 charts that March. I actually checked to make sure that their memories were correct. And it is true, they danced to Proud Mary, rolling, rolling, rolling on the river. And there's some irony in that because that's exactly what they did after the club.
They rolled on the river.
Pop, I call him Pop now, my birth father. He invited Lana to go down to a camp that his family had along the San Bernard River. There's a Silver Stream trailer there. And they went down to the river and they rolled.
The trailer was rocking and it came knocking.
Yeah, there you go. And so that was just one night. They never went out again. And he didn't know that, I like to say, he never lost a minute of sleep worrying about the way things might have been.
Right. Perfect and appropriate.
About that, because he never knew. And 2 weeks later when she turned, well, I'm jumping ahead. So 2 weeks later, Jerry is at Gilly's nightclub. And this is from his recollection of the events. He's at Gilly's and he sees Lana with Ben, and Ben looks nonplussed. Ben's not happy, and he sees them leave in a huff, and thinks, "Uh-oh, I don't know if she told him about the river."
Right.
I think this might have been the night that Lana recalled the date rape, which is why 2 weeks later, when she found out she was pregnant with me. She assumed that it was Ben, and I think back then when you didn't have DNA, it was really a toss-up.
Right.
And she, from what she's told me, she chose not to contact Jerry or talk with Jerry about it.
So let's get to the part where you meet Jerry.
Well,
how that went? How did you find him, and what happened with that?
I want to tell you that, but I have to tell you something else first, real fast.
Okay.
One thing happened in this story that there's a lot of question marks in an adoptee's life and in mine, particularly. She, in 1983, when I was 13, my grandmother, my birth grandmother, Jerry's mother, was dying, and she called him to her bedside and said, "Jerry, were you ever with that Lana girl?" And he's thinking, "What, Lana girl?" She says, "You know that Lana girl from back when?" And he said, "Well, no, Mother, no." He was 27 when I was conceived, and Lana was just 20. Mm-hmm. And very quickly he realized he just lied to his mother on her deathbed and wasn't going to be able to take it back. When she said, "Well, you should know, she came up pregnant. It was taken care of. And she married a young man in the military and went to Hawaii." And he said, at that time, he thought, "Why is she telling me this?" And he thought, "Well, she was with Ben a lot more than she was with me. I probably shouldn't worry about it." And he didn't. Until, fast forward another 20 years, he gets this email from classmates.com, and he sees it's from Lana. And immediately, because of the conversation that he'd had with his mother, knew that that was most likely that he was definitely most likely the birth father.
Wow.
And we don't really know how his mother ever knew about that. That is a mystery to us. That is still a mystery to us.
Interesting.
So
that right before we meet your dad, we're going to take a little music break. We're going to listen to a little Elton John since we've been practicing for Jazz Fest. This is, I guess that's why they call it the blues. It's a little appropriate.
Don't wish it away, don't look at it like it's forever. Between you and me, I could honestly say that things can only get better. Before you and me run to the place that our hearts will we hide. And I guess that
just stare into space. Picture my face in your hands. Live for each second without hesitation, and never forget I'm your man. Wait on me, girl. Cry in the night if it helps. With more than ever,
listening to 102.3 WHIVFM.org if you're streaming online. I've got Patricia Meyer, and we are talking about her meeting her adoptive parents. I'm sorry, her birth parents. Mm-hmm. She was adopted when she was younger. It's an amazing, incredible story, and we're to the part where Patricia is about to meet her birth father for the first time. Go ahead, Patricia.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, so thanks to my birth mother's help, I met my birth father. She let him know that I was interested, and rather than, we did it reverse of the way I did it with Lana. We decided to take a DNA test before we met. I think he was so excited that if it had turned out false, he would have had his hopes up for nothing. So we took the DNA test. It was a perfect match, and we agreed, he lived out in the country, and we agreed that I would drive out with my husband at the time, and if it was a positive, we would have steaks and margaritas and spend the weekend together, provided it was all comfortable for everyone.
Right.
And if not, then we just get in the car and come back home.
Right.
And because I had learned a lot by flying by the seat of my pants in the first reunion, I had done a lot of reading and studying up and knew how to help prepare Pop and the family for the nuances of reunion. So he and I had just a fabulous reunion right from the start. And you have to be careful and go slowly, I guess is my point. And Lana and I had some challenges because people, if you've never done this before, you don't know. So when I met Pop, it was like looking in a mirror. It was like seeing the 70-year-old version of the male version of myself. His sister's name was Patricia. She's an adoptive mother of three. And my half-brother was married to an adopted person, is married to an adopted person as well. So the family was steeped in adoption issues and adoption stuff already.
It's amazing how many people it touches.
Yes. And he and I are incredibly close. Very similar in our personalities and the way that we think. Before I met my birth parents, I would have said 70% nurture, 30% nature. I would flip those numbers around now based on my experience.
It's so fascinating.
It really is amazing the things we learn about ourselves when we have genetic mirrors and meet people who are programmed from birth to be like us. So he and I had and still have, you know, just a great relationship as well. And it's just been, it's been, the entire process has been incredibly life-changing. I have found a very strong sense of self that I never knew that I was even capable of. It is, I don't know how to explain the feeling of being complete. And, you know, I have met, I have to say, to get this in, I know we're closing short soon, but I've met a lot of adoptees who went on searches and found their parents had died or rejected them, said, no, I don't want you in my life, and just had bad outcomes. But none of them have ever said, I wished I had never searched. They were all happy that they had found their truth. There's a saying in the adoption community, it's not who you find, but that you find.
Right.
And I would, when people say, you know, question, well, do I really want to know? In my opinion, I can't imagine not knowing.
Right. I think you said it perfectly when you said your adoption antenna went down.
Mm-hmm.
It's so vivid. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
I want to mention you've got an amazing blog again. It's www.myadoptedlife.com. I think there's a hum going on. Okay, I hope you guys can hear me now. You're listening to NOLA Matters with Patricia Meyer. My name is Dominique, and I'm talking about her blog now. It's www.myadoptedlife.com, and we have a bunch of resources for people.
Dominique, can I interrupt you real fast?
Sure.
There's a video on my blog of my reunion with my birth father. If anyone wants to watch it, it's had 117,000 views on YouTube.
Wow.
So you can actually see the scene that I was describing and the moments that I met him.
I cried within 2 seconds of it. It was amazing.
Thank you.
It's so beautiful. It's such an amazing story. And gosh, I can't thank you enough for sharing this with everybody. It's so personal, and thank you for sharing it.
And anyone can email me if they have questions or are interested in getting help. Please feel free to have them email me. There is a place to email me on my blog.
Okay, and let's go through a few resources for people who are thinking about searching. If you've been adopted and you want to search, I'm going to read a couple, and then I'm going to have you read a couple of these. One of them, this is State Reunion Registry. At the Louisiana Voluntary Adoption Registry, and that's in Baton Rouge. I'm going to give you a phone number. It's 800-259-2456. Website is www.DSSSAM.state.la.us/OFFOCS/HTML/registry.html. I'd call the phone number. Again, the phone number is 800-259-2456. Another great resource is the Adoption Connection of Louisiana. Phone number is 504-277-0030. We have another one is the Adoption Connection of Louisiana and the Adoptees Birthright Committee. They are located in Metairie. You can look that one up. Another one is Adoption Search Organization in Denham Springs, Louisiana. And then there's something called Lost and Found out of Baton Rouge. Their phone number is 225 769 2456. And Patricia, can you give us a couple more resources and give everybody some tips on searching and what you think the best way to go about it is?
Yes, absolutely. I think the first one, the registry that you mentioned, is actually through the Louisiana Department of Children and Family.
Okay.
It might be a secondary registration, but I know that the Department of Children and Family has a matching service. You just have to fill out a form, and if both parties, the birth parent and the adoptee, fill out this form, then they can very quickly make a match, and after 1 hour of counseling, you can be brought together.
That's wonderful.
The other resources that I have are also, they're books listed on my blog, but the...
Say your blog again, please.
www.myadoptedlife.com. One is Journey of the Adopted Self, A Quest for Wholeness by Betty Jean Lifton. Another is Coming Home to Self, The Adopted Child Grows Up by Nancy Verrier. And The Adoption Reunion Survival Guide, and I would say that's an important one if you go into reunion.
Sure,
it's great for preparing yourself for search, reunion, and beyond. That's by Judy Bailey. Additionally, a great resource for finding family in general is a website called FamilyTreeDNA.com. This is actually a site that uses your DNA to match you to relatives who've also submitted their DNA to the site.
Wow.
So through that, you can often find relatives who then can, who may know of the birth parent's story, or you can trace to your birth family in that way. There's a wonderful television program. It's over now, but it's still, you can still search for it, called Cryo Generation on MTV. It's the story of 12 children who were all related through sperm donation, who gathered together and using all types of research and non-identifying information were able to find their donor.
Interesting.
Which donation agencies don't particularly like, especially if the donors don't want to be found.
Right.
But
right.
I may have given away the end of the show there, but it's no. but it's a wonderful look into the lives of adoptees and the lives of the perspectives of the adoptive parents. Because there's parents there who are for and against, and so you get a really nice peek into what all of that is about.
Right.
Additionally, as I mentioned, Ancestry.com and Adoption.com. I would start by writing down everything you think you know in as much detail. I would sign up on as many adoption reunion websites and registries that you can find through search. And if anyone wants to email me about Search Angels help, I'm happy to give some referrals to some Search Angels that I know. And social media is huge. I'm sure people have seen on Facebook people holding signs up saying, help me find my family. And it is working. And sometimes works too well. Because if I can leave you with anything, if you're going to do this, read the books. Prepare yourself. Take baby steps. Don't rush in.
Great. What a wonderful story. And again, I can't thank you enough for telling everybody this story. I know it's hard because it's personal, but it's things that people need to know. And, you know, we have to have these.
Well, I'm happy resources. I'm happy to share my story. I'm actually writing a book about it.
That's great.
Yeah, writing
we'll
a book.
Have to have you back on the show when it's ready.
I'd appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
So I want to thank everyone for listening to this edition of NOLA Matters. You're listening to 102.3. If you want to stream online, it's whivfm.org. And thank you very much, everybody, and have a great evening.
Clara Ward and the Gospel Singers really live up to all the dictionary requirements of the word revival. A revival must be an awakening, an emotional experience, an overcoming of depression. I personally guarantee that you'll have all that more when Clara Ward and your Gospel Singers give out with that very popular spiritual, Swing Low.
Swing low. Me. social media, social justice media,
and the fuck you!
The revolution will not be televised.
Fool me once.
WHIV LP, New Orleans.
You can't get fooled again.